This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Obviously, you got a quick little sneak peek. I'm going to take you through the bulk of what's on the wall here so you actually know what you couldn't spot already. And then I do have a little something extra for you that I got permission from Kevin to share with you guys, so I think you'll enjoy that. I just want to say thanks for coming out, because, you know, it is like you're the closest extension of us out there, so we're always grateful to have you out here. Hope you guys had a good time. Hope you had a good time with Chris and Tom yesterday. Those guys are amazing, as you know. They're the best, and the work they're doing in this movie is the best they've done yet. I know Chris was kind of fucked up yesterday, but he looks great. By far the best looking Thor we've had. I mean, he just looks amazing. Loki we've really kind of had for a while now, so he just, you know, since Avengers and he got his long hair, he looks tremendous. And just speaking specifically about, you know, kind of the vision for this the second story in Thor, and third part, if you take in Avengers, which we do take into account, you know, this is setting high expectations, but we are in, at least for the Thor story, a darker era. You know, I can't say the Empire Strikes Back of our storyline, but if it was, wouldn't that be amazing? But you know, just to kind of catch you guys up, this does follow right after the first Thor. It does fall right after Avengers. It's been about a year and a half, 2 years since the first movie. And, you know, promises were made. I'll come back for you. Jane Foster, he did come back. Not for her. That'll be awkward when they hook up again, I'm guessing. You know, and what's wonderful about these films, and so many of you guys know the books, you know, we read them for the ongoing stories, and then we love these big disaster moments that happen to draw all these lives together. And again, for so many people out there, they've never read comics, so they don't understand how good these stories can get, and that now we have a lot to draft off of after Avengers. You know, our guys, who have amazing arcs coming in their own lives, had to step out, deal with this big threat, and now come back. Well, now all those threads continue to send a ripple effects throughout our Marvel cinematic universe. We have Iron Man, who's Tony Stark, who's pretty torn up from the effects of being in that combat. You have Thor, who had to take the prisoner Loki back to Asgard to be dealt with, and this time he's going to be locked up in a cell where he's not going to have control. You have Erik Selvig, who had a god in his head messing around for an entire movie, which probably isn't good for your psyche. You know, lots of these threads continue to just spread outwards in ways that only deepen the stories we're about to tell in these individual sagas. So, you know, it's truly our job to kind of bring the books to life in the way that made them so popular when we were all kids. And you know, it's a big duty, but we're doing our best. So anyways, you know, we brought Alan Taylor on, and he's done such amazing work in Mad Men and Game of Thrones and Sopranos and Rome. And we had spent a lot of time in the palace and the royal family, and come during a time of celebration. The Bifrost was destroyed at the end of the first Thor. Odin had to break a lot of rules and laws and take a lot of himself to send Thor to Earth and Avengers. And during that time when they couldn't jump from Asgard to the other worlds, chaos reigned. And so we come into a time of real strife in the Nine Realms. You've got marauders who are moving from world to world that are pillaging and you know, attacking helpless planets because they know the cops can't come. And we catch into a story in a way finding out where the hell is everybody, you know, and I think we do it in a way that's really great. So I'm going to just take you through some of the visuals that are up on the wall and quickly kind of, you know, show you some of the story elements we've got going. And then I can answer some questions for you guys at the end. Probably not most of them, but some. I will also tell you, this is no bullshit, Chris came out of the tent yesterday and said, "Those guys are great. They're fun. They know their shit." You know, he's like, "They're tricky, but they know their shit." And so, you know, it's a view shared by all of us that, you know, yes, you are tricky, but you do know your stuff, and you guys love it. You know,
are we going to see the Bifrost get fixed in this film?
You're not. You know, that's the thing we talked about. And again, I'm going to catch up with that artwork you're actually going to see. Let me just start with the last frame, which is embarrassing. Oh God. Anyways, no, we're not. Because, you know, that's shoe leather that we didn't really want to get into. But you'll see that it's not the Bifrost that it was. It's a brand new structure. It had to be rebuilt. So I'll just kind of go in order, and I'll catch up to that in one second.
Sure.
So we start off in a very small way on Earth. And you get to meet these kids who are running around this abandoned warehouse, and they're having some fun, and suddenly their toys start to take off and act in really weird ways, and they get into this this warehouse, this massive cement truck, and it's floating about 3 inches off the ground. And one of them is brave enough to touch the bumper, and it suddenly starts to rotate like a massive planet. So obviously things on Earth are not as they should be. And this is the beginning of an element that's spreading across the universe. We're calling it right now the singularity. And it's basically like a flex in the universe. If you could think like there's fault lines across the cosmos, they expand and contract about every 5,000 years, and they're felt on every world. So this is the first sign of it on Earth, and what is initially very fun and playful and cool ultimately will build across all the planets, something very, very disastrous. We transition from that and we reveal our dark elf ships. They haven't been seen in 5,000 years. So as far as anyone knows, Odin was a child the last time they were dealt with and believed to be wiped out. So when they return, it's not good news. And
what are they called again?
The ship is called the Ark, yeah. And then this is the Dark Elves. And at the beginning of the film, once they awaken, Malekith, who we all know is in the film ultimately, sends out spies to go find out what's up with the universe. They've been gone for a long time and need to know what's going on. And so that's the Ark. That's their singular mothership. And then the smaller crafts you see here are the Haros.
Now, do you have to name these things because you have to sell the toys?
No. We'll see if they make the toys. I'm not a toy guy. I mean, I collect toys, but I don't. Yeah. I'm not peddling the toys. I'm going to peddle the movie. But you guys want to know what a dark elf looks like? If you guys went to the wall and saw the plaque, that's what they look like. Now, I think the rendering that we actually built even looks better than this, but this is basically the kind of a dark elf stormtrooper. Kind of represents the creatures that they once were. And Adewale as Abram. He's the second lieutenant of our big bad, Malekith. And that's Chris Eccleston. I don't know if you guys are going to get a chance to see him today, but he is out and about. So.
Are his eyes different colors?
Yes, on the damage side they are, yeah. Sorry, it's a little blown out. I would have adjusted it, but... this is Vanaheim. This is one of the first worlds we actually come to in the film after we see the kids and the dark elves. And this is a very peaceful world that has been overrun by the marauders I was talking about. So this is one of the places where we actually get to meet our heroes first time in the film. If any of you guys have internet connections, you've seen a lot of this footage online, shot from the woods in Boardwood. But the stuff we got is even better. But this is the Vanir. So they're a very, you know, although they're a warrior race, they're not quite as advanced as the Asgardians, and they're not prepared to handle the onslaught of these villains from the various worlds outside of the Nine Realms. And so what it is, it's a ragtag band of, you know, space pirates, basically, that have just come together to basically steal as much as they can. You know, and as we expand further into the star, assuming we reach, you know, stories like Guardians of the Galaxy, it just shows you it's a rich Marvel universe out there, and we're only beginning to just scratch the surface of what can be out there. Here's a big spoiler. So we have a stone man from Saturn in this film that does face off with Thor. You're the only ones to see the picture and actually understand what that is. For those of you that don't, these are the first guys that Thor fought in the comics. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty epic that we got to bring him out. And we actually have a full-size bust of this guy that's pretty sick. And are you guys one of the armory later today?
Mm-hmm.
You should ask. We have this club. That's so it's you should ask to hold it. And then Asgard. So like I said, you know, the first time around we got to see Asgard and all of its beauty during the Ascension ceremony and all of that. And everyone had their costumes buffed and polished. But we didn't really get to see the other shades of it, where the normal folks live, the darker underbelly. And this time we're really going to get out there and explore as much of Asgard as we can. It's really important for us as we move further out in the stars, we move deeper into the worlds that we're visiting and the characters themselves, just so that people like our girlfriends and wives and buddies who don't read comics and scared it's going to be, you know, nameless films I won't name that we know exists, So we just have to make sure we're always bringing great story, rich character, and depth and detail. So basically, the prisons of Asgard are different than the prisons of Earth. And so this is the dark side of Asgard that if you were to see it, you don't usually get to see anything else after. And a fitting home for a character like Loki. Is. And then across the cell, you know, you see these horned characters and marauders and various demons. And then in his cell, he has a little bit of a bed and a couple of books that Frigga brought down there just so he could be as comfortable as possible. But as far as Odin's concerned, you stay in. So, and Hiddleston is once again doing a tremendous performance for us, seeing new shades of his character that we haven't seen in the past two films. I'll leave this one a little less explained.
Oh, we saw him yesterday.
You did?
Yeah,
that's
right.
We also saw a prison break.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
To the second unit for the
well, there you go. So, well, he looks better than that, you see, as you know. Rene Russeau, beautiful as always. She actually returns to us next week. She's freaking. This is a set you're going to walk through today. It's actually going to be dressed in two different ways. We have Frigga's Chambers. And then we get to the Hall of Science, which I'll show you in a minute. So, again, this film's got a lot of location works. We were in Borland, we shot our initial fight. We were in Iceland, where we shot a lot of the Svartalfheim portions. We're all over London later on in our shoot. And then we're getting a lot of elements here to build the shores of Asgard that we saw, usually from the air, but never close to. And from here, you'll find the Asgardian training grounds, where all the Einherjar are training for the battles that are currently happening all across the cosmos. That's where we get a chance to actually have Thor and his father reconnect after he comes home from a successful journey.
That was the set we saw yesterday, guys. Mm-hmm.
And this is like, because they've been going through quite a few troops now trying to reign in the universe, they've got young E-guards that are coming up in the ranks. Odin's in full warrior mode, so we don't see him in all of his, you know, more of a royal setting. He's just the general who watches over his troops, training his men. And just some of the looks. Most of them are largely similar to the previous film. I'll tell you that this one is inaccurate. If you guys have seen any shots of Zach, I don't know if they got online or not, but his face, he has blonde hair, he has a blonde goatee, it looks fantastic. But that costume is accurate, so... he came on board, and he's just owning the role of Vandril, just doing a brilliant job for us. Again, just showing you more shades of Asgard that we hope to show. Just, you know, deepening the audience's experience. And what's really important this time around is, you know, this is a world built by Thor's great-grandfather, grandfather, and father. And we want to be able to show that through the architecture. You know, just like the observatory, we're not going to cover, hey, how's that building going? We're just going to show people. And you'll see different kinds of materials and age and damage building up to the golden palace that we've already seen and the golden towers that live beyond it. So all of it's just, again, showing the age and the time. And again, this is another great example where it's very rough, but we're inside an older structure, and then in the distance you can see Odin's palace, which just shows that Odin's always kind of watching over you, no matter how far out you are. And this architecture is not correct, but it gives you a sense of, so this would have been a structure that perhaps Bor had built, and then since then this new structure has come up beyond it. Just showing again the history and making Asgard more real at a visual glance. We spend a lot of time at the pub. We actually get to meet some of the folks that we know from the books, Volstagg's family, Fandral's maidens. You know, we get to see who the hell these guys fight for when they're out there every day, and get to spend some time in the pub. Did you guys walk the Medina yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
So it looks much better than this, and so do you guys. So it's a really, really wonderful environment. It was just rich, full of life. We had music and mead, and it was, you know, it just feels exactly like you'd want it. And the warriors come home and tell exaggerated stories, especially Volstagg, of the mission that was just accomplished. And you really get a sense of the warrior nature. Jimmy, Alexander are always beautiful, and so she's had a slight redo on her costume. So the observatory, so here you go. You can see that in the design, the beams are still being put up. It's still in the mode of being rebuilt. And what that allows for us when we get inside is once the Bifrost, that is fully operational, whirls, it becomes a viewing window out to the Kirby cosmos. You'll see celestial bodies and planets and all kinds of, you know, the wonders of space that we weren't allowed to do before because of the way the structure was built. So it actually allows us to do some neat visuals. And then it still has all the gears and the various elements that people like from the original design. So while not complete, it works. Heimdall also has some extraordinary scenes in this film. He really plays a much larger role, and he turned out to be a real fan favorite in the last film, so we were lucky to have him come back and do some more for us. And that's his redesign. He should have a sword in his hand, but he's got kind of a gunslinger jacket element and a sign of Yggdrasil on his vest, and so he's just looks tremendous, and it looks amazing on him. This is an important element of the story. That is Jane Foster, and she should not be standing that close to that. Svartalheim. So this is where we got a lot of our shooting. We brought out Chris Eccleston and a bunch of Dark Elves and Adewale and Chris and Tom, and did a lot of great work out here, both first and second unit. You know, we'll lay in a lot of VFX, but the weather was with us, thank God, and we really got some extraordinary stuff, and the boys were tortured, but it was really cold, and at times we had to have fans on them while it was cold, so...
This
was
in Iceland?
Yeah, it was all in Iceland, yeah.
Are those real shots, or that's concept art?
That's all concept art, but it was based on shots we had taken on scouts, and then we went back to those places and actually shot it all up, so it was amazing. So this is the Hall of Science, again, another place you're going to see today. This is going to be a pretty neat spot that we actually get to explore, which will, you know, go into the various, you know, breakthroughs and discoveries of the Asgardians, where you'll see functioning models of the Big Bang and all these wonderful technologies that no human has ever laid eyes on before. And inside it's going to be this living tree, which we believe is connected to Yggdrasil, the cosmic tree. And, you know, the effects and woes and success of the universe kind of are spoken through this living object. So should the end of all things ever come, this would probably be the first thing to fall. We have a really tremendous scene in here with Thor and Odin.
Are you guys talking about Ragnarok?
It's one of the bigger stories, right? So, who knows? So again, you saw Chris. He wasn't in the full look yesterday.
No.
So great. So okay. Well, he looks like I said. This was a concept design. The final look and hair, I think, exceeds even where this design went. But he really looks tremendous in this film. Throne room is one of the few connecting pieces that we have from the first one that we're bringing back into this one. And again, it's just we've added some more detail and some additional. You know, just elements again to show the many ages of kings that have come before Odin. Einar, Einar ships. Now you saw most of this. This is just be some additional concept design. So the Harrows, and they have a very unique black hole kind of engine where they actually kind of pull themselves through space as opposed to propel themselves. That was an idea that Alan Taylor was really excited about. So they're very unique in the way they move through space. Way to do damage and hurt people. And there's some scale reference on the arc. Not good. And we're actually going to be putting some boats both in the seas and the skies in this film. You're actually going to see, you know, where the Viking ships came from. In the MCU, we're going with the idea that the Asgardians came to early man, met the beginning of the Viking people. They had ships like this and their technologies that inspired the Vikings then to begin to build their longboats and their various structures. So we're turning history inside and out. Instead of the Vikings creating the gods created the Vikings. So we get to see what's the Asgardian take that would have inspired what we know on Earth so well. And we have a pretty spectacular scene on one of these skiffs in the movie.
Are those wings?
Yeah, basically the different kinds of sails. So mm-hmm. depending on how fast the ship goes, it has different kinds of mechanics. And again, just to show you again how Asgard will look from a distance, it is showing the wilds. It is getting out there and getting wonderful plates and actually shooting on locations. Then we can lay in these elements. But it's just getting to know Asgard better as an entire realm as opposed to a very specific place. And there's some good examples of some very early tests that we did, these last two. So this one's especially great. This is some stuff we shot in Norway. And we added just a few elements. None of these buildings or anything are final, but it gives you a sense of, yeah, I understand why a community would be built there, and there's Odin's palace way off in the distance. You just get a sense of a realness to the worlds. And then when you see one of these skiffs, you know, move through the water and then suddenly take flight and move towards Asgard without using the water at all, it just keeps that whole Kirby, you know, Lee, Simonson kind of Asgard alive. Always keeping high-tech elements there, like the Rainbow Bridge, but, you know, doing it in a way that just really feels relatable.
Is there poverty on Asgard? Do we see any of that?
Not in this movie, but there are different classes. I mean, they are just the people, you know. There's bar maidens and, you know, and bartenders. I mean, we always have the debate, are they all gods? I guess if they all came to Earth, they would be. But here, they're just people with kids and jobs. And I think they look after each other. So I think that this is probably a society that wouldn't allow anyone to fall that far. I think everyone's got to have a purpose. So it's a question, you know, we've never gone too far down that path, but I think it'd be a pretty horrible shame if Thor's like, I will protect Earth, but my own people, meh. So I think it's important that we look after the Asgardians in a way that feels right. But I think it's also like, hey, some people's got to wash dishes, I mean, and they own bars. And what's lovely about the pub is you feel like guys have been coming here since the first fight. You know, there's old shields on the wall, and this wonderful feeling of children running in and sitting on laps, and, you know, all the dads and wives drink mead and revel and tell stories. So there's just this hominess to it. I'd love to live in a place like that. So, and they're all shapes and sizes, and they're all coming off the model runway. You know, they feel like real folks, voluptuous and skinny, not the hottest. And, you know, it's just, it feels real. So, you know, they can't all look like Chris. How could they? So again, and then I have a couple shots of the final battle. Huh. I'll leave you with that one. So we got a stake in this for sure. But before I let you guys go, I want to show you one more thing. This is what Kevin said I could show you. I wasn't sure.
Where was that supposed to be?
Earth. All right, so this only has about the first 3.5 weeks of work in it, ultimately. I'll give you a taste of what it looks like that we're doing. And it does explain a little bit of the makeup of what I'm saying. So we had to absolutely come back and answer all the questions and promises from the first movie. We have to acknowledge what happened at Avengers, because why the hell wouldn't we? Mm-hmm. And we also had to find a way to let people come in and go, I'm the super movies, you know, I don't like all this shit. I want to just come in and I'll try it, you know. And I hope we don't burn them. But in this film, you can sit down and just go along for the ride. We did create a new character, a guy named Ian, who is Darcy Lewis's intern. So our intern has an intern. And he's kind of the fresh human eyes in this whole experience, like Darcy was so well in the first film. But again, start small with these kids. We show the threat. We meet our heroes and friends. Find out where our folks are from Earth that we love so much. And the story just kind of rolls out in a very comfortable pace. So I think we've done enough hand-holding to allow anyone to come in, but also, you know, keep it pacey and payoffs for people who have been, you know, with us for now, you know, so many movies. So, anyways, this speaks to that a little bit. So.
Your ancestors called it magic, and you call it science. Well, I come from a place where they're one and the same thing. To be ruled. The Earth is under my protection, Loki. So you let him take the war criminal Loki, who should be answering for his crime?
Oh, I think he will be.
Thor, do you swear to guard the Nine Realms?
I swear.
Do you swear to preserve the peace?
I swear.
Do you swear to cast aside all selfish ambition and to pledge yourself only to the good of the realm?
I swear!
Thor!
It's going to be good. it is really going to be good. So that's kind of the dog and pony. But, you know, being on both movies, seeing the process, knowing the pieces as they come in, I can just tell you that I think people are really going to be pleased, and I think if they loved Avengers, I think there's a lot for them here. I think if they love Thor, it only gets better. I don't know. We were very fortunate coming in because we had so much to work with, and we have such talented people involved. The team here is extraordinarily talented, which you'll see as you go around and see the individual pieces being made. And Alan Taylor's really brought a very rich and real vision to this film that I think will really connect with everybody. You know, I mean, you look at Game of Thrones, you know, it connected with such a wide audience. My wife saw the White Walkers in the beginning, the first episode, she's like, oh my God, kill me! And then she was hooked at the first episode. So, you know, that's our job, you know. I mean, we all drag our friends to the theater sometimes, and it's on us to allow you to do it the next time. So I think we've got a really, really special film here. And I mean, this is just a small piece of what's being done. So that's kind of what I got.
We don't see much of Earth there. Besides the couple of bits in there, is it much less Earth than the last movie?
No, it's about a 50-50 split.
So, okay.
We like I said, that's only a few weeks of footage, to be honest, but we were able to actually put together so quickly. And a lot of Earth is still to come.
Okay.
So, there's a good amount of time we spend there. So it's half on Earth and then half on other worlds. A good chunk on Asgard, but then we are on other worlds as well.
We saw a few shots of Stonehenge in there. Is that where you're going to kind of get a big fat story there?
It definitely plays into the storyline, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Do we see Odin's vault again?
What's that?
Do we see his vault?
The vault isn't in here, but you get, like I said, you get to see the prison and some other sides of Asgard you'll see, but the vault doesn't come into play here. Not in the story.
I was going to ask, who's playing this Ian character? You mentioned the intern.
Jonathan Howard. He's a wonderful actor. I think he's in World War Z. He's really tremendously talented. We had a bunch of guys come in, and you know, Kat Dennings was such an amazing like breakout for us, and then she went on to star in Two Girls. So it was tough. I mean, it was like this guy had to earn his place in a group of three that did so well, Natalie, Stellan, and Kat. And he came in, and he's just this lovable, sweet kid who just can't catch a break with Darcy or anyone else on the team, to be honest. And the way he kind of flounders and struggles to kind of find his footing with this gang is tremendous. And his small little story in this evolves beautifully, I think. So he's
Stellan, is he in it?
Oh yeah. There was a quick shot of him with Alan. Yeah, he's definitely in this. We couldn't do it without him.
How did the success of the Avengers? You had a budget for Thor, mm-hmm. success, and then each of these movies is getting bigger and bigger. Has that impacted the single film's budget?
You know, I mean, again, I can't get into finances too much, but we never spend less than we need to make these movies what the audiences demand. If we start just cranking these things out with no money and no... you can just tell. You know, you can just tell all of a sudden we're looking only at the bottom line and not the experience for the fans. But it wasn't like, hey, Avengers made a lot of money, let's all just start throwing money at the screen, because that's not the success either. You know, lots of films have made the mistake and we can just fix it with cash. But I think as you see the sets and you get to see the exteriors we're working with, I mean, we just went out there. You know, we spent more time outside of sets to just really capture the environments and the worlds and to get in there and improve the costumes. And it's just about elevating everything. So Marvel's always willing to do what it takes to meet the demands of our very demanding fans, as you guys know, even the Blue Cheese specifically, and so be honest with you. But also, you know, the other fans that we've just earned, you know, they deserve it. So we're budget conscious, but we're not going to harm a film for the sake of, you know, a dollar.
So. Did Johnny stay away from S.H.I.E.L.D. for this movie? Because he kind of had S.H.I.E.L.D. on the previous movie just because you were kind of building up to Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, this story obviously involves Earth to a large degree, but, you know, the comics are the best example. You know, S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't always get involved, and the Avengers aren't always there. Maybe nowadays they are. I don't really watch as much, but... you know, but there are threats that need to be dealt with on an individual basis. So S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't have much of a presence at all in this one. But, you know, it just depends on what the specific threat is, you know, and since so much of this also involves other worlds, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. has no jurisdiction there.
You guys, this is part of the phase two, as Kevin has said it.
Yeah.
You guys are in production with Iron Man. You are getting ready for Captain America. You have all these other films, including Avengers 2, announced. Yeah. How much are you right now laying groundwork in this, or at least setting possibly a few things up that will pay off in Guardians of the Galaxy or Avengers 2?
You know, I'd say, again, I have to be careful with how I word this, but I think the biggest thing we are is very conscious of what we're all doing. So we don't want to paint ourselves into corners and say, oh, we can't use him, we just killed him. So so we have to be very careful how we lay the pieces out, and then the threads that will build to the greater threat will always be seeded. You know, I think they always start smaller and then build to the next Avengers film. The thing we need to be careful of, and Kevin said this from the very first film, is the bigger picture of these Avengers or these big group sagas can never overwhelm the individual story. If we do that, we destroy our whole thing. Because all of a sudden, these guys' individual journeys, these characters just don't matter anymore. It's like, well, I'll just wait for them all to get together again. I mean, Iron Man's a fucking awesome story to follow. I mean, it's a tragic character. I can't wait to see what happens in this next story. Thor, I think, is at its deepest point ever. There's more humor, there's more fun, there's more loss and sacrifice and struggle. It's getting better. And Avengers is only deepening those individual stories. So Avengers should be an additional payoff, but not be what's driving everything else. Otherwise, the individual sagas become worthless. So there are seeds, but, you know, they'll become clear as we get closer to Avengers.
You mentioned it when we're looking at the dungeon and such. I know from, you know, the casting report, the rumors. Are we going to see some of these fire demons?
You're going to see aliens from all over. Specifically, you know, it'll be a wait and see. But, you know, like I said, we are moving further out into the nine realms of the universe. So, you can't fly too far before you hit something else in the universe. So,
I may have missed this, but where are the Marauders from?
Well, basically, we're considering most of them outside of the Nine Realms.
Okay.
So there are some that are from the worlds we've already touched on and mythology speaks of. You'll also probably see some weaponry inside the armory that'll be familiar to you guys.
Okay.
So these guys are from all over. They banded together largely just to become space pirates.
Okay.
So we wanted to give the widest kind of look and feel of the MCU and just see what could be outside of just the ones that Thor patrols. So it's just also great to see, you know, rocket launchers and laser guns and machine guns, and, you know, it's what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was about time that we got out there and showed that. So it was exciting.
Quick time to make one or two more questions.
Yeah, is you know, Malekith is
yep.
the leader of the Dark Elves? Is he working for someone else?
It's hard to say. I know in the comics he did.
What sort of imprint does having, you know, Game of Thrones out there and also The Hobbits coming back, what sort of imprint does it have in this movie where you kind of have other things to compare to? When
it's a funny question, because when we first started working on Thor the first time around, Kevin's like, I don't want to look chicken in their beards and bones, and, you know, it just couldn't look like Vikings in space. And if you look at the comics, it isn't.
Right.
You know, it's this beautiful fusion of the Viking culture with wonderful advanced technology. So the science fiction element always needs to be present. So in the pub, where you see wooden tables and glasses of mead and families, and then if you look around the room, the lighting elements are completely otherworldly. The toys the children play with are these mm-hmm. flying skiffs, you know. So the advancements of Asgard are always present to just keep that science fiction life alive always. Because we don't see ourselves in competition with The Hobbit, which is such a... I mean, we're all so excited about it. We all love Lord of the Rings. We're huge fans of, obviously, what Alan's done in Thrones. And so we love all that stuff, but we're trying to stay well outside of that competition. So I think, you know, I use those as great examples because of the realism they brought to those worlds. Well, we stick to the science fiction angle for ours and keep it unique and very reflective of what we love from the comics. So, you know, if we've done our job right, and I feel we're right on track... it should feel like the Asgard we knew from the first film, and you're just getting a deeper exposure to it from both the personal and a walking through the sights and sounds of it as well. So I don't know. I think we're really onto something on this one.
I'm curious about the action scenes. Obviously, each of these films has, you know, you've been raising the bar. Talk about how you're possibly raising the bar in action scenes in this, and also, are there a number of action set pieces? Like, that? Is there one or two that are just massive, and then a lot of little ones, or?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's action throughout the whole film, and it's obviously where the story dictates. I think, you know, none of us, again, are trying to replicate what was in Avengers. But I think this one has an intimacy of combat, so that the losses are deeper, the struggle is more vicious and more personal. So when you're in that combat, you really feel it, and the people that are fighting, you actually have a real stake in those fights. And then the platform where these battles take place, because of things like the convergence, turn the environment upside down and break a lot of the rules. So I think it's unlike anything we've done yet, and no two action scenes are alike in this film. So I think we surprise and delight all the way to the end. So plenty to be seen on the action side. But I'll tell you, some of my most favorite scenes shot so far are some of the quieter ones. We've really just gotten some wonderful performances out of everyone, from Tadanobu Asano and Chris Hemsworth early on in the film. But then anytime you put Tom Hiddleston and Chris in the room, it's just electric. I mean, it's stupid how good they are now, and they have such a shorthand. But Anthony Hopkins, Natalie Portman, Kat Dennings, Idris, I mean, the names just keep coming. And even, you know, Jonathan, who just joined us, he's doing a great job. So we've been very blessed with some brilliant casting. We've had wonderful people help us with that, and the talent has only gotten better and better every time they come back to us. So we're really fortunate. So,
what was kind of the motivating factor for bringing in Eccleston to play Malekith? Like, what was it about him specifically?
You know, you look at his work and his range and his ability to kind of step in strange worlds and environments and kind of bring wonderful life and character to them. Sure. And then there's also a look to him. If you look at the comic, I mean, it's a tough one because obviously we had to evolve from that. He had the look and the feel and the chops that we needed to just bring... we want a relatable villain like we've gotten, like in Loki. You know, he can't just be like, I want to kill everyone! So so we needed someone who would bring levels and a real range. And Adewale is the same. Mm-hmm. He's this wonderful lieutenant. He's not just this goon that he sends off to fight. There's a real brotherhood shared between the two of them. And you believe that they are truly fighting for what they believe is right. And that's where people enjoy those kinds of struggles. If it's just the guy twirling his mustache, then who the hell wants to watch the movie? And these guys have done a beautiful job bringing life to, you know, extraordinary and weird characters. Yeah. So it's been great.
And, I mean, just looking at Adewale yesterday, I mean, he's hardly recognizable. Is it going to be the same with Christopher?
Oh, no. Don't worry. You'll see both of them.
Okay.
You'll get a good look at them.
Okay.
And, yeah, they move beautifully with whatever they have on, but you do get to see their faces and see their performance pure.
Okay.
And they're both really passionate, so we're fortunate. So, I think you guys can go see some weapons or stages or something or both.
Yeah. All right, guys.